is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul, it's time for the Whole Health Initiative with Dr. Holly. With more degrees than a thermometer, Dr. Holly's PhDs include psychology, natural medicine, herbal medicine, nutrition, and Ayurveda. She's a scientist, professional speaker, and the author of over 20 books. She also sees and works with energy, and she's here to help you achieve complete optimum health. Please welcome Dr. Holly back to News for the Soul.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to News for the Soul, and welcome to the Whole Health Initiative, and welcome to Wednesday the 22nd. I hope you're enjoying your day today. We have lots to cover today. I wrote the article for today last week. I don't think I sent it to Nicole. However, I wrote it last week, and then I came across an article this week that that I really should be focusing on growing your vegetables more so this week. I'll tell you why. We'll do the article. We'll do the rest. But I'm going to explain what the articles were about that got me really concerned. I think in May there were 7 different food storage units that were burned in the U.S. Now we see that they're burning them in, from what I understand, Sweden, Norway, and Germany. Now, both the black hats and the white hats are burning the food storage. You wonder why the white hats? Well, apparently, of course, the black hats are trying to create the food shortage. But what the white hats have found is that some of the food storage units are being sprayed with really fatal toxins. And so when that happens, then the white hats burn the food storage, trying to protect us. So not only should we be growing food in the garden because it's healthier, because it's non-toxic, because it's fresh and fibrous, unlike food that you get in the stores, non-toxic or non-GMO, all that really, really good stuff. And, of course, we've seen food prices go up 3-4 times the amount that they were just a couple of years ago. I know the juice that I buy is an organic unsweetened grapefruit juice, and I mix it with lemon juice, and I use the soda spring on it to carbonate it, but I love that. And I used to be able to get it 2 years ago for 99 cents. And this is Canada, and it was in the Walmart. It's the only thing I ever buy at a Walmart. Now, it's $4. So, you know, we look at our lettuce and tomatoes and cucumbers and what have you. They've all gone, your cauliflower, broccoli, everything has gone up tremendously. So that's another good reason to be growing your own food. The third good reason is because we're getting food shortages. Now, we've been told for, well, we've known for several years that they're going to create this with the Great Reset, if you've been following it for years. Of course, when COVID was introduced, the narrative was introduced, we knew it was coming a lot quicker. And we've shown the last year or so the shelves in the stores are getting more and more depleted. Food is actually, I think they're spraying different toxins on produce because it's going bad a lot faster. I used to buy in bulk. I can't buy in bulk anymore because you can't go through it that fast. So those are all good reasons to grow your own fruit and vegetables. Now, a challenge in Canada, more so than, you know, northern states, but certainly not the southern states and other countries around the world. But if you're living in a more northern hemisphere, wherever you are in the world, and you've got colder climates during the winter, we can't grow vegetables in the garden. So I've been working on putting together programs where you can grow your food in your garage. So it's called the GG Project, the Garage Garden, using different types of lighting systems, different types of drainage systems, different types of container shelving, floor boxes, et cetera. So we're going to be focusing a lot on that in the next little while because in order to have health, you have to have healthy food. And more, you have to have food to begin with money not being worth anything and food prices going through the roof, And then the toxicity and all the rest of the things we've talked about, we really need to be focusing on growing our own food. So as much as I've been promoting it for 7 years, the last, because of the COVID narrative, now it's becoming even more important. So we're going to work with that too. But in the meantime, we're going to start out by talking about fats. What are healthy fats? What is the use for in the body? Now, I grew up believing, being taught, that fats made you fat, so you don't need anything that has fats in it. The problem with my genetic disorder is I really needed those good, healthy fats, and I wasn't getting them. So we've seen over the last several decades, actually, the conflict about fats, including cholesterol, the cholesterol myth that we've been taught. But there are tons of different types, in fact, thousands, I shouldn't say tons. There's thousands of types of fats or lipids in the body. There's over 600 types of lipids in the blood plasma alone. That is huge. Now, again, we've all heard that cholesterol is bad for you, and then we heard that cholesterol is a mess. I'll just do a little bit of elaboration on that for you. We've gone over this in other programs before. But some of the HDLs, which are considered the healthy lipids or the healthy cholesterols, if, for instance, HDL-3 is higher than HDL-2A or 2B, you're in really, really big trouble. Furthermore, look at the LDLs. Well, some of the, which are considered the bad ones, well, some of the LDLs are more important to your health than the HDLs. We do a profile of all the different health program, cholesterols in the body. So when a client comes in and says, oh, you know, my doctor says I have high cholesterol, what am I going to do about it? We first want to look at, is it the good cholesterols, which bad cholesterols, and do you really have a cholesterol issue? Because there's like a whole bunch of different types of LDLs and HDLs, and we need to figure out, do they actually know what is high? And most doctors don't know that you can actually get a spread analysis of the different types of cholesterols. That's how poorly trained they are. I've had several, when I ask for it, they go, what are you talking about? Well, yeah, it's more expensive, and yeah, you do have to send it to Toronto, but yeah, that's what we need. And then they come back going, holy cow, I never knew this, and you're right, your client doesn't have a problem. Yeah, you're right. Why? Because cholesterol is used for a ton of different things in the body, which we're going to get into. You've probably heard your liver is your largest organ that does over 500 functions for the body to support every other system and organ in the body. But one of the things it does is produce 80% of your body's cholesterol. So when your cholesterol gets too high, your liver makes less. When your cholesterol gets too low, your liver makes more. And you make different ones for different things. So we will get into that as well. So there are, let's just focus on fats as a whole, not just cholesterol. There are eight categories of fats that are known. Now, six of them are from mammals and two are from bacteria and plants and marine life. Together, they make up over 35,000 different types of lipids or fats that are in the database. Who would have thought? Okay, so most of us have heard of your omega-3s. Those are your anti-inflammatory fats. Your omega-6s are your pro-inflammatories. And they omega-9s are the ones that the body makes. Helps to regulate. Now the main omega-3s, there's a huge category of them, or a huge number of them, the main categories are your ALAs, EPAs, and DHAs. The EPAs and DHAs are the ones that block the COX enzyme, COX, enzyme, that's an acronym, that blocks the conversion of your omega-6 fatty acids into what's called the inflammatory prostaglandins. Now prostaglandins is a big word, and again, has all kinds of subcategories. It can be very confusing because in some situations they're pro-inflammatory, in other situations the same one can be anti-inflammatory. But we need both. Whenever there is an infection or structural damage to the body, anything that causes a challenge, we do a pro-inflammatory process first. That's your omega-6s. And then we resolve it and clean up everything and bring a nice healing to the body with the anti-inflammatory. So we do need both of them. Now, in addition to the inflammatory regulation, both omega-3s and omega-6s also help regulate the cholesterol and blood clotting. Essential lipids like linoleic acid and linoleic acid are important for creating hormones. They're important for maintaining good, healthy vision. They're important to support your immune system. And they provide communication between cells. All these are fats, don't forget. Okay, fats are used in a variety of other ways in the body. They help to actually store fatty-based nutrients, for instance, vitamin A and D and E and K. And let's just go back to D3. You can make a ton of D3 in 20 minutes outside in the sunlight. Now, imagine all the sun that we're getting during the summer months. Most of your body, your skin, is exposed to the sun. You're making thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of units. Well, all the excess units can be stored in fatty tissues in your liver so that you have D3, which is, remember, it's a hormone, it's not a vitamin. You can have it throughout the winter, which is pretty cool. Our body's great for storing things. Just as an aside to that, one that I use all the time, if you're prone to gout, you want to eat lots of cherries during the summertime. Cherries have a compound that prevent you from building up uric acid, and that compound can be stored in the liver. Lots of things can be stored in the liver. Sometimes for years at a time, which is why vegetarians are often think that they're so healthy during the first few years of vegetarian, because the liver is storing the nutrients that they had from before. And if they're not supplementing those nutrients in some way, then sometimes after 7 years, it takes a while, when they've used up all the stored nutrients, now they have problems. If they're supplementing them or making sure they're getting those nutrients in other ways, of course, they're not having a problem. Okay, so those of us who don't live in the sun belt, going back to vitamin D3, don't have to worry. As long as we get enough sun during the summer or the sunny days, then we can store it in the liver to help us through those dark, cold winters. All right, now some fats are used for energy. For instance, the triglycerides. Now, the triglycerides have always had a really bad name for the general public when it comes to cardiovascular. You look at your HDL and your LDL and your TGs. Well, we do need those TGs in the body, those triglycerides. We store them as well, and we use them as a backup system for energy. So most of us will use different types of sugars to make the phosphate. ATP that the microbiota makes for you, the fuel for the cell. But between 30-70% of the energy actually comes from fats as opposed to sugars, depending on how your body is functioning. If you get too many, like anything else, when you get too many, they can cause a problem. And so that's why excess triglycerides got a bad name, because they can contribute to cardiovascular issues. But when they're used properly, they not only provide energy, they provide an internal, or they're involved. They don't provide. They're involved in the body's capacity to regulate internal climate and maintain a constant temperature. They help you produce and regulate hormones. And they are used in the reproductive system. For instance, if you're insufficient in your TGs, you will stop your periods and become infertile. So they do have lots of really good functions. It's just like anything else. Too much of a good thing can become a bad thing. Okay, what else? Well, now let's go back to the cholesterols. Cholesterols are required to create what's called the phospholipid membrane that surrounds every cell in the body. It has, if you want, stents that holds that membrane open so that the 7 different types of transport mechanisms or 3 different types of effusion mechanisms that take compounds in and out of the cell can function. If you don't have sufficient cholesterol and those stents break down, then the membrane breaks down and you can no longer have compounds going in and out of the cell. So it's very, very important. Now, there's hundreds of types of lipids that create the cell membranes and that send and receive signals within and between cells. Pretty important. Now, the fats are also found, and actually these fats can be derived from cholesterol as well, and it's called myelination. That's the insulation on the stem of the neuron in the brain. So you have millions of neurons. They all have a stem, and it's like an electrical current called potentiation that goes down that stem, and it is most effective if you have sufficient myelination. The myelination protects that stem of the cell. If your myelination or insulation starts to break down because you have insufficient fat or for a number of other reasons, then things like MS. Okay? So in the brain, they're not only important for the myelination on the stem of the neurons, but they're also involved in sustaining the nerve impulses, involved in memory storage, and involved in tissue structure, just in the brain alone. Now remember, your brain is about 70% fat, so those are some of the really good fats that we require. Next is a layer of fat that occurs underneath the skin. Now that also insulates the body and helps to regulate the body temperature. Again, good reason to have good fat. Vital organs require a layer of fat around them as well. Use the example, kind of like a bubble wrap, protecting the organ from injury. I saw that term years ago, a bubble wrap around the organ, and that stayed with me. Okay, good fats are essential for blood clotting. They're essential for muscle movement, and they're, like we've already said, the inflammatory system. Now, your bile salts, they also come from cholesterol, and they move down into, get stored in your gallbladder, and then when you have a meal, you release that bile salt into the intestine and it helps to break down the fat from your meal. Pretty cool. Cholesterol also provides, this is really important, compounds to make your steroidal hormones, your testosterone, progesterone, and different estrogens. It's important to create the active form of vitamin D, which we always said is not a vitamin, it's actually a hormone. And those same cholesterol fats are also needed to maintain a pregnancy as well as regulate the calcium in your body. Huge number of issues coming from cholesterol, right? That's why the liver is making 80% of your cholesterol. Crazy. And not only that, I didn't put that in here. When you take a statin drug, an anti-cholesterol drug, Lipitor being the most common, it stops the last enzyme required in order for your body to make cholesterol. Well, if you move, so now you're not making the cholesterol, but if you go further down from the cholesterol, that's where you make your CoQ10, which not only is an antioxidant, but it allows your mitochondria to produce fuel. And Lipitor stops all that, or any statin drug. That's what statin drugs do. They're crazy. Why are they ever used? We're crying out loud, people. This line. Okay, Nicole, you got the line. All right. Lipoproteins are used to transport fats around the body. That lipoprotein is when you have a lipid that's connected to a protein. And they transport all these important fats for all these important different reasons all around the body in the blood. So what is the conclusion? We should, in fact, eat good, healthy lipids, like those found in avocados. Remember, I've said so many times, the ratio of omega-3, 6, and 9 in avocados is very similar to what we have in the body. Consequently, avocados are very good for you. Not only that, you know my favorite compound is glutathione, and avocados are high in glutathione. Other healthy fats or lipids are in nuts and seeds, soft cheese, which also has good bacteria in it, dark chocolate. Remember your chocolate, you want 88% or higher. Eggs, fantastic source. Fatty fish, although I always say we used to say salmon was good for you, and now we don't because of the radiation in the ocean still coming out of Japan. So I suggest you eat steelhead trout instead. And another good source is Greek yogurt. So having said, those are good sources. It's just a short list. It's not an all-inclusive list, but it's a short, good list. But in addition to that, we then have to identify what are the bad fats that cause lacking, that cause blockages, that cause amyloids, that cause weight gain, cause all kinds of crap. You're looking at your, and you know, guys know this, your fast foods, your fried foods, your french fries, ice cream, desserts, fatty snack foods like corn chips, processed foods, desserts, salad dressings, for crying out loud, there we go. I get a bad time for saying for crying out loud and for crying out loud, people. So there, I said it again. Margarine, we know margarine is just one carbon away from plastic, so why would you ever eat margarine? You got your beef fat and poultry skin. Now, the reason those are particularly bad for you is because they hold all the toxins. They're like the liver. The liver processes all the toxins in the body. But your beef fat and your poultry skin hold it for you. So, not for you, but for the animal. And then when you eat it, of course, you're taking all that toxin in. So that's why you really shouldn't eat beef fat or poultry skin. Heavy creams and bacon. Okay? So, now you know what your fats do, and now you know what to eat to get the good, healthy ones and what to avoid to get the crappy ones. Okay, that's it for today on that one. Now, let's see what else we have here somewhere about questions. All righty. I'm going to do... Okay, here we go. Andrew in the UK. Someone recently told me probiotics were dangerous if you have low blood pressure. Is that true? Well, let's start out with good microbiotics, pre and probiotics, the whole combination that makes your microbe in your gut is well known to decrease high blood pressure, both your systolic and your diastolic levels. Now, because they have been identified as being able to reduce high blood pressure, it was assumed that if you had low blood pressure, it would also be reduced. Now, that is a huge controversy right now because a lot of people are saying, no, they actually regulate it. They don't just reduce it. So if it's high, they bring it down. If it's low, they bring it up. Because there's so much controversy about it right now, I'm not going to give you an absolute answer. I'm just telling you it depends probably on which probiotic because we know there's over 35,000 different species that may or may not make up your particular profile. So your particular profile of microbiotics or microbiome in your gut is like your fingerprint. It is unique to you. Okay? So, which ones, to me, this would be a very, very difficult study because what is your microbiome? What's the actual profile? And which ones are you taking? And that may, those different variables would determine, I would think, whether or not it's regulating it or just bringing it down. So, controversy. Sorry, I can't give you an actual answer that you're looking for. Continue to do the research. I'll continue to do the research, and we'll probably find out sometime. My attitude is, and you don't have to take this, it's just my personal opinion, we need those microbiotics in our gut. We are incredibly deficient in them, just like we're very deficient in the omega-3s. We're very deficient in a variety of things in today's society, like glutathione. And so I would eat the foods, not necessarily take my probiotics, but certainly eat the foods that are high. And one of the foods I would strongly suggest is cabbage. Cabbage not only has a broad spectrum of bacteria, but it has both the pre and pro, digestible and non-digestible, soluble, non-soluble fiber to transport and feed the bacteria. And it's a really good food for helping to regulate that gut. Now, if you're not used to eating cabbage, you might want to start out with just a little, whether it's in coleslaw or soup, whether it's in sauerkraut or kimchi, whatever. Cabbage does have probiotics in it that produce nitric oxide. Now, that nitric oxide is good for your cardiovascular system, and it also kills off the bad bacteria. But if you're not used to having it in your gut, then you'll feel gassy or bloated if you eat too much at first. So just if you're not used to eating cabbage, graduate it. Don't just sit down and start eating a whole bunch of it. You will have an issue. Okay. Let's move on. Susan in Connecticut. I have been having the worst brain fog for weeks now. Just can't snap out of it. Anything that you can suggest would be great. Well, brain fog, just like so many other things, can be caused by a number of different things. Number one, your adrenals. If you're stressed out either physically or psychologically, your adrenals go into hyperactivity. Chronic hyperactivity causes adrenal fatigue. And what happens with adrenal fatigue is you stop producing norepinephrine and epinephrine, which are two neurotransmitters you need for that good, healthy cognitive function. So that can cause it. A hypothyroid can cause it, although, as we've said many times, typically the reason for hypothyroid is issues with your adrenals and or your liver. Lack of sleep, of course, can cause it, and lack of melatonin, staying in a deep sleep for longer periods of time. So, unfortunately, when we're stressed out and producing lots of cortisol, we end up producing less and less melatonin. We typically should be making melatonin 24/7. It should be stored in your pineal gland. It should be released from the pineal gland when you're going from stage 2 into stage 3 to help you stay in a deeper sleep longer. It detoxes the brain while you're asleep and actually orchestrates all kinds of healing in the body. Now, obviously, if you're stressed and you're not making the melatonin, you're going to be tired and the brain's not going to be functioning effectively and you're going to have brain fog. Nutrient deficiencies like B12 are known to cause brain fog. Allergies to things like peanuts and dairy and aspartame, any one of its called names, synthetic sugars are very, very bad for you and particularly bad for the brain. There's a number of different medications that can actually cause brain fog. There's a number of different physical diagnoses like anemia, whether it be iron or B12, depression, diabetes, Sjögren's syndrome, migraines, Alzheimer's, hypothyroidism, we already said. Autoimmune disorders like multiple sclerosis, lupus, arthritis. Sometimes it's because of the pain involved. Dehydration, obviously we said that. And that's it. Oh, viral infections. They can also cause brain fog. So any of those issues obviously can cause it, but regardless, depending on what issue is causing it, would determine what protocol we would follow, okay? So understand, you can research all of them and see which one applies to you best, and then go from there. Okay, Daniel in Toronto. Danielle, I feel like I have been slowly sleeping more and more and more, and now up to 10 to 12 hours a day, and I've heard a few of my friends saying similar things. What's going on? Well, number one, it could be, and we could have said this for other things as well, it could be what's in the chemtrails. All that metal crap that they're putting, the aluminum and the copper and mercury, all the different, graphene oxide, whatever they're putting in the atmosphere, it could be affecting you. Number two, it could be mitochondrial dysfunction. Mitochondria, what's the number one cause of mitochondrial dysfunction? Our pharmaceutical drugs, and just for those who don't know, again, mitochondria are in every cell of the body, and they produce the fuel for the cell. A basic cell will have between 50 and 500 mitochondria. A brain cell, a heart cell, can have upwards of 10, 12,000 mitochondria. Number one cause of mitochondrial dysfunction is pharmaceutical drugs. And that can affect anything in the body. If the mitochondria aren't producing fuel, the enzymes can't function, and that means the cell can't function. And so you're going to go downhill. But what are some other things? Well, adrenal fatigue, again, constant stress. Who hasn't been under constant stress during the COVID narrative? Holy cow. You know, family issues, being isolated, being guilted or negated because you're wise enough not to take the jab or because you got the jab and all the issues that come along with the jab or because you knew you shouldn't take the jab but you had to hold on to your job. So the cognitive dissonance that came along with that. There's just so many different reasons that there's financial huge, medical huge. There's just so many issues why you might have been under chronic stress that ended up causing adrenal dysfunction, and now your adrenal fatigue is causing you to be in fatigue. Vitamins B2, 3, 5, 6, 9, and most people know that as folate acid or folate, B12, those can all cause the body to start going downhill. I mean, we already had an issue with magnesium. We've had an issue with magnesium for years, and now they're saying 98 to 100% of the population is low in magnesium.
You consider that a basic cell will use magnesium for over 380 different functions. Just to make one compound of ATP, that fuel that the mitochondria make, you use magnesium 180 times. So think about it. You've got one cell, one brain cell, that has 12,000 mitochondria in it that are constantly producing fuel and constantly using 180, using magnesium 180 times to make each compound of fuel. Wow. You start getting overwhelmed by how much magnesium you need in the body, and yet 98 to 100% of us are depleted. And you use different types of magnesium. There's 13 different types. Different types are used. Whether you say you're constipated, you use one type. If you need it for the heart, use another type. If you need it for for muscles, you use another type. So different types of magnesium are required by the body, and yet the commercial soils are depleted in magnesium. So the plants don't have it. So the plants aren't making the nutrients that they need magnesium to make the nutrients for. So we're not getting it. Blah, 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 blah. There's a whole chain of domino effect of things going on. In addition to that, the vitamin D3 hormone, vitamin C can also cause deficiencies, can also cause the body to be in fatigue and sleeping more and more and more. So you want, again, we go back to, we need to have good nutrient. We need to have non-GMO, healthy, nutrient-dense food, not food that's depleted of nutrients and high in toxicity. Okay, what else? Besides adrenal fatigue, nutrient deficiencies, of course, dehydration is directly related to fatigue and dizziness and headaches. Obesity is related to depression and fatigue, type 2 diabetes. Although, remember, 30% of obese people have diabetes, but 80% of diabetics have obesity. So which is causing which? Now, there's all kinds of medical conditions like sleep apnea, chronic fatigue syndrome, MS, anxiety disorders, kidney issues, diabetes. They can all cause one to sleep more and more and more. Fibromyalgia or any pain disorder will cause you to have more sleep. Pain is incredibly exhausting. I'll say, if you are fatigued because you've been working out in the garden, growing your garden, that's a good kind of fatigue. Mental fatigue is horrible. Emotional fatigue is worse. And pain fatigue is probably the worst. So if any of those are applying to you, then you might want to consider dealing with them. Okay, what else? Diet. High in sugars, high in processed grains can cause depression and fatigue. Too much caffeine, yeah, it'll give you an upper in the moment, but it's hard on your adrenals, full of toxins, and will end up causing fatigue. Energy drinks are really hard on the body, the liver, the adrenals, and can cause fatigue. Medications, which medications? Steroidal medications, blood pressure medications, antidepressants, they can all cause fatigue. Shift work, someone has told a different perspective, shift work can cause fatigue. I just thought of something else. Oh, alcohol or drug dependency can cause fatigue. So there's lots of different things. Again, depending on what's causing it, will depend on what protocol you utilize. All right. Salmon, Arizona, my get up and go, got up and left. It just doesn't seem like it's coming back on its own anytime soon. I'd love some advice from Dr. Holly on this, and thanks, and you're welcome. But I don't know that I can specifically help you because we've gone over a lot of it already. Mitochondrial issues can cause your get up and go to get up and leave. But what can we help besides what we've already suggested about the mitochondria, about the adrenals? Is a maybe Bach flower remedies. Maybe it's adaptogenic herbs or adrenal herbs, mitochondrial support supplements for essential nutrients. Actually, one of the things I'm finding quite often right now is because people aren't getting their amino acids. They might be eating their meat, but they're not getting their amino acids. And a really good way to get it is a really good hemp oil that's grown in good soil that's processed and bottled properly so it doesn't lose the amino acids and you keep it in the fridge. It has all 21 essential and non-essential amino acids. So that might be an issue, too, that we need to look at. Okay? So that's it for the questions. Now... Now we're going to go into, just a minute, I'm going to get rid of this. There we go. Can you grow vegetables in your garage? Now, to me, this is, I mean, I've just been working on this for the last couple of weeks. It's a huge, huge issue. Like I said before, I'm doing a repeat here. We've got food that's growing commercially that doesn't have its nutrient, whether it's magnesium or a ton of other things, because it doesn't have magnesium. We have high cost. We have toxicity. And now we have depletion of the actual products. So our shelves are becoming more and more scarce. So can you grow vegetables in the garage? What I was looking at, we're not going to go over it too extensively today because we're going to keep going over it and over it and over it so I can get you guys to grow vegetables in your garage. It doesn't have to be the garage. Of course, it can be any room in the house that you can have some spare room. But you might want to look at what are the different types of grow lights. Now, you can get grow lights in a fluorescent tube style. You can get them in broad spectrum in like a 12 inch by 12 inch. I've got a 6 by 6 inch. I have some that are 2 feet by 4 feet and 3 feet by 4 feet and 4 feet by 4 feet. You can get them that are on stands or that you hang from the ceiling. So I would suggest that you start looking at where in the house can you start growing your own food. We need it to grow. And especially, again, like I said, if you're in a more northern climate, we actually have winter. In southern climates where there is no winter, it's not a big deal. But although it might be if you have, like, monsoons and what have you, I'm not sure. I didn't look into that. Didn't think about that component. I was thinking of more people that are in the more northern climates that can only grow their fruit and vegetables during the summer. You might want to find an area in the house that you can start growing your own fruits and vegetables. Now, I have came across one girl on the island, Vancouver Island, who has been doing this for a while, and she said her tomatoes were growing already full and harvesting at this point in the garage. So, holy cow, now that's a good idea. So first off, you might want to look at spacing. Where is the space that you have? Now, with that in mind, keep in mind vertical growing is a lot more efficient than spread growing, horizontal or spread growing. So anything like pole beans, tomatoes, cucumbers, things that grow on vines, are going to be really, really good because they can grow up and you don't need as much space. There's even a vine for spinach. You might be familiar with that. I had my first one last year and it grew beautifully and it provided beautiful leaves and it grew on the same poles that I have for the pole beans. So first two things are, where in the house could you grow a garden? And in fact, could you grow one in your garage? Now, some people are, Holly, I parked my car in the garage. Well, would you rather park your car outside and have food or park your car inside and have no food? You've got to make these decisions in life. My car is now being parked outside. I have a double garage. I am going to use both containers and shelving units. So shelving units can have their own grow light. Each shelf can have its own grow light, or you can put them on structures. You can buy them in structures as well that are like 4 or 5 feet high that allows the grow light to hang. Another thought would be, if you have followed what I've been suggesting in the last couple of years, you might have created structures in your gardens outside so that the pole beans and the tomato plant, indeterminate vine tomato plants, not the bush one, can grow up those structures and produce a whole lot more. Well, those are great, again, those structures you can bring in. We were thinking about actually creating two beds inside, like a raised garden bed. Obviously, it's going to have a base to it. It has to be lined with plastic. It has to have a drainage component to it. It has to have rocks in the bottom of it, et cetera. But fill them up with soil and then we can put those structures that are outside normally in the summer, bring them inside for the winter, and continue to grow all the pole beans and tomatoes and different fruits, vegetables, cukes, etc., that like to grow on structures, like to grow on, as a vine. So we've already got the structures. We bring them in every winter anyway so that they don't rot. So why not just create a bed for them and utilize those? Great idea. Holy cow. If you want another idea I'd come up with while I was putting this all together is, instead of creating wooden beds like you do outside, you might just want to go and buy some Rubbermaid containers, you know, those 60-liter, whatever, the big ones, and use those. That's a lot cheaper than building a wooden box. Again, you'll have to have some sort of drainage. You don't want rotting roots. So how much rock do you need to put in the bottom of it so that you can then fill it up with soil? The roots can get access the water as needed, but it won't rot the roots. So things that you're going to have to look into consideration are, what kinds of things can you grow in the garage to begin with? So I've made a list of a few of vegetables: carrots and radishes, onions, tomatoes, peppers, mushrooms, and pole beans and bush beans. Leafy greens that you can do are like lettuces and kale and spinach, arugula, Swiss chard, as well as, don't forget your sprouts and your microgreens. Now, sprouts, as we've gone over before, sprouts don't need the sunlight, but your microgreens will need the sunlight. Herbs that you could grow in the garage are like basil and oregano, mint, cilantro, thyme, parsley, rosemary, and dill. Okay? Now, you might also want to think about putting in some marigolds. Now, marigolds we've often talked about as being bug-resistant. Make sure. I don't like marigolds. They're pretty little flowers, but they smell, and I don't like the smell. But I have lots of them in my garden because they are incredibly bug-resistant. And as much as you shouldn't have the same kind of bug issues in your garage or wherever you put your garden as you would outside, you still might want to plant some marigolds just to make sure. I'm going to. So, what we're wanting to look at is, number one, where is your spacing? Number two, what degree can you do vertical growing? Number three, obviously, what is it you want to grow? Four, we're going to look at things like sequential growing, intensity growing, and companion growing. So in different containers. What you would put in different containers. Do they require the same pH? Do they, does one take an awful lot of soil nutrient versus another not taking so much soil nutrient? That would be companion growing. Do they help each other in terms of resistance to pathogens that might be in the soil? Do they like growing together one another? Do they put off different essential oils in effect or gases that they like to grow or don't like to grow near one another? So all those types of things we're going to start looking at. But what I'd like you to do, I'm really strongly encouraging you to set up gardening in your house. We can use windowsills. We can use all kinds of other parameters in the kitchen, the bathroom, etc. But the support, I would think, is going to be in this garden that we're going to start creating. So look at what your spacing is, what your lighting is, what your ventilation is. We might have to put ventilation. We're bringing in the electrician to put in a fan in the garage. Want him to do it so he can maneuver around whatever lighting wires may or may not be in there. So to have some ventilation. What else are we going to, obviously, what foods do you want? I am going to try growing things like cauliflower and broccoli and cabbage in the garage as well. I haven't seen those come up on lists so far, but we're going to work with, you know me, I'm experimenting all the time. We will try to do that. Okay, now as the summer goes along, other things we're going to be looking at when it comes to food is, are you pickling? Are you fermenting? What are you canning in some way? Are you making jams? Are you making jellies? What are you doing? Different sauces, tomato paste. What are you using your fruits and vegetables for as you grow them? Because now we need to be very, very careful. Okay? So we've got an awful lot to look forward to over the summer in terms of our food nutrient, because that is the basis of our health. Right? What goes into your body obviously affects how well your body can function and be effective. So we, you know, for all the old reasons, we want that good, healthy food that doesn't have toxicity. And of course, again, if they're burning down food storage units and, you know, the containers aren't coming into the docks and the farmers are being paid to till the produce back into the soil, or not even to seed the soils, or can't afford the gasoline required for the equipment to seed the soil. I mean, there's just so many variables going into food supply right now that it is very, very important that we start paying very good attention to this and taking care of our health at a very fundamental basis. Okay? So, we have actually finished early today. That is quarter two. Holy cow, I don't know that we've ever done that before. But, you can go to my website. No longer has the 980 articles. I was going to put up a whole different kind of website, but we're not going to do that just yet. We're still keeping it under the wire so that any of the articles that you want, you're going to have to come back to Nicole archiving all the articles on News for the Soul. So go to Dr. Holly, Whole Health Initiative, and you should be able to find all the archived articles. And going forward, we are going to focus more and more on health. Again, think about the jab and what the jab does to your immune system, what the jab does to your cardiovascular system, your respiratory system, your neurological system, your renal system, your gut. That jab is doing an awful lot of damage. And in order to protect yourself most effectively, you have to have good, healthy nutrients to support your immune system, to support your glutathione, to be able to inhibit or neutralize the compounds that are in the jab, like the spike protein and the graphene oxide. And we want to do that really, really well. Well, to have good, healthy food, good, healthy body, good, healthy immune system is going to be the best way you can protect yourself. Okay? So, having said all that, it's been a great day. The sun's starting to come out. I want to go out into my garden and figure out what I'm going to do in the garage. So I'm Dr. Holly with Choices Unlimited for Health and Wellness and the Whole Health Initiative on News for the Soul. You can go to my web page, because I only have one page now, choicesunlimited.ca, that has my contact information. And you can go to drhollybooks.com to get on the books that I've been writing. We're almost finished editing this one that I'm working on. And then the next, which is Cerebral Palsy, a novel, but it's about cerebral palsy and how to deal with it, how to correct it. And from there, we're probably going to go back to doing one of the books with Tom, probably the one that he dictated from the other side, which was a very weird experience, when he crossed over. That will be the next one. Okay, so that's it for today. Have a great week. Choose to eat healthy and wise, and start looking into what you'd like to do in your garage or your garden. Take good care. Bye-bye now.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.